very good afternoon to you all. It's time once again for What's Cooking. I hope I find you all well and ready to enjoy with me today's show. So, without further ado, what's cooking? Today we're going to talk about bread. In Old Testament times, all the evidence points to the fact that bread making, preparing the grain, making the bread and baking it was the women's work. But in the palaces of kings and princes, and in large households, the baker's duties would be specialised. Bread was leavened, that is, an agent in the form of a balm was added to the dough, which caused the mixture to rise in the shape of our familiar loaf. The hurried departure of the Israelites from Egypt, described in the book of Exodus in the Bible, prevented their bread from being leavened as usual. The Jews today commemorate this event by eating unleavened bread on special occasions. The ruins of Pompeii and other buried cities have revealed the kind of bakeries existing in those historic times. There were public bakeries where the poorer people brought their bread to be baked, or from which they could buy ready-baked bread. A baker's guild was formed in Rome round about the year 168 BC. From then on, the industry began as a separate profession. The guild or college, called Collegium Pistorum, did not allow the bakers or their children to withdraw from it and take up other trades. The Greeks and Romans liked their bread white. Colour was one of the main tests for quality at the time of Pliny. Those who think the craze for white bread is a modern fad should note this. Pliny wrote, "The wheat of Cyprus is swarthy and produces a dark bread, for which reason it is generally mixed with the white wheat of Alexandria." Plato pictured the ideal state where men lived to a healthy old age on wholemeal bread, ground from a local wheat. Socrates, however, suggested that this proposal meant the whole population would be living on pig food. In those days, there were certain mean bakers who kneaded the meal with seawater to save the price of salt. Pliny did not approve of this. The Romans enjoyed several kinds of bread with interesting names. There was oyster bread to be eaten with oysters, artologanus or cake bread. There were rich breads made with milk, eggs and butter, but these of course were only for the wealthy and privileged people. The Egyptian grammarian and philosopher Athenaeus, who lived in the 3rd century AD, has handed down to us considerable knowledge about bread and baking in those days. He wrote that the best bakers were from Phoenicia or Lydia, and the best bread makers from Cappadocia. He gives us a list of the sorts of bread common in his time. Leavened and unleavened loaves, loaves made from best wheat flour, loaves made from groats or rye, and some from acorns and millet. There were lovely crusty loaves too, and loaves baked on the hearth. Bakers made a bread mixed with cheese, but the favourite of the rich was always white bread made from wheat. In ancient Greece, keen rivalry existed between cities as to which produced the best bread. Athens claimed the laurel wreath, and the name of its greatest baker, Therion, has been handed down through the ages in the writings of various authors. During the friendly rivalry between the towns, Lynceus sings the praises of Rhodian rolls. The Athenians, he says, talk a great deal about their bread, which can be got in the market. But the Rhodians put loaves on the table, which are not inferior to all of them. When our guests are given over to eating and are satisfied, a most agreeable dish is produced, called the half loaf, which is made of sweet things and compounded so as to be very soft, and it is made up with such an admirable harmony of all the ingredients as to have a most excellent effect, so that often a man who is drunk becomes sober again, and in the same way a man who has just eaten is made hungry by eating of it. The island of Cyprus had a reputation for good bread. Another old writer, Eubulus, says, "'Tis a hard thing beholding Cyprian loaves to ride carelessly by, for, like a magnet, they do attract the hungry passengers." All through the ancient days, bread and bakers were held in the highest respect. This respect lives on to our times, for what would we do without our bakers? In early English historical times, there were constantly recurring periods of famine due to not enough or too much rain or frosts and other natural causes. The ruling classes, knowing that rebellion often followed famine, did their utmost to keep the price of bread from rising too high. Laws regulating its price were passed during the reign of King John, 1202. Not only did the law fix the price, but it strictly allocated that price between cost of material and an allowance for necessary charges to the baker. For instance, a master carpenter would be paid only 2 pennies per day, ordinary woodworkers receiving only 1.5 pennies, but bakers earned less than this, but they were not dependent on the weather and could always be at work, unlike the carpenters. All through English history, great efforts were made to keep the price of bread low, to maintain good quality, and to prevent corruption and dishonesty. The bakers liked to keep the mystery of the trade to themselves, and to prevent unlicensed people from starting up. If a young man wanted to become a baker, he had to serve an apprenticeship of 7 years. The law supported the bakers in preserving their craft to themselves, and there were statutes published with various penalties for infringement. In those days, there were certain dishonest persons in the trade. In 1298, heavy fines were inflicted on bakers for selling short weight bread. In 1310, a number of female bakers at Stratford were arrested for sending short weight bread to London in their long carts. As the bread was stale, however, they were let off with a reprimand, but were forced to sell their stale halfpenny loaves at 3 for 1 penny. In 1327, a fraud was discovered at a public bakehouse where the citizens used to take their dough to have it baked. The bakers who ran the place had secret openings made in the moulding boards, and when the people's dough was placed on the board, one of the bakers would secretly pinch off piece after piece from the uncooked loaves for their own benefit. They were exposed and caught, the men placed in the pillory with slabs of dough round their necks, while the women were sent to the Newgate prison. You can imagine that the angry populace took full advantage of the pilloried thieves and pelted them with any foul thing that came to hand. In the time of James I, there are records of bakers slicing their stale bread into fingers, soaking it well in water and mixing it with the new dough, to the great abuse and scandal of all their mystery and the wrong of His Majesty's subjects. So what are the ingredients required for bread making? Flour, water, salt to give it flavour, and yeast. If flour was made into dough with water and salt only, and the dough baked, the result would be a flat, solid and hard loaf that nobody would like. First, the dough is mixed with just the right amount of flour, water, which must be of the right temperature, salt and yeast. The mixture is left to stand in a warm place to ferment and rise. When it has well risen, it is knocked back. This means that it is thoroughly re-kneaded. The extra mixing helps to give it just the right degree of firmness and also makes the yeast cells work harder and better. Then the knocked back dough is left to stand, ferment and rise once more. When the dough has risen, it is divided into pieces of the right weight, either by hand or by machine. Another method of making bread dough is the no-time method. This is achieved by mixing the flour, water, salt and yeast together with a bread improver that accelerates the dough. This development does not need the dough to be knocked back. After dividing into pieces, it is given a rest period. The pieces of dough are moulded into the loaf shape required. This can be done by hand or by a special machine. Next, the moulded pieces of dough are put into tins, almost but not quite ready for the oven. The dough must be given its last chance to rise before it reaches the oven. And here, usually a pause of 3/4 of an hour is necessary. Bread is perhaps the most important item in our diet. It has often been called the staff of life. It comes to us in many interesting shapes and flavours. Besides the ordinary white, wholemeal and wheatmeal loaves, many other kinds are on sale, which the baker calls fancies. There are the malt breads, bread with currants, milk loaves containing milk powder, and various tea breads. Then there is spiced bread in the form of gingerbread, but this really comes under the heading of cake, although in Holland it is always featured on the breakfast table. One thing you can be sure of, bread is one of the finest foods it is possible to get. In fact, it would not be an exaggeration to say that we cannot do without it. There are many items of food and luxuries such as ice cream or sweets which we could well do without and be far healthier for it. A balanced diet to keep you strong and well in mind and body must always contain that staff of life, good bread. Our first recipe today is for breakfast soda bread. Now, this is not one I've tried, but I'm certainly going to because it's very quick and easy to make. And this bread does not use yeast. So, how do we get it to rise? Let's find out.
Dan, how did you come up with the idea of breakfast soda breads?
I'll tell you what it was. It was actually having some horrid toasts in a B&B somewhere. I can't even remember where. But I sat down at breakfast and I was really looking forward to it the way you do. And there was these miserable slices of, you know, just nasty bread. And I thought, why does it have to be that way? Because I remember at the time I was going to a local mill and they had this beautiful water mill that was near there that made great flour. So I thought, why not try and stir up B&Bs and home cooks everywhere and get them to use local flour, make a really simple bread that you could have in the morning.
So how does soda bread differ from any other kind of bread?
Oh, it differs. Really, when we think of bread, we think of yeast risen bread, but soda bread uses bicarbonate of soda to give it its kick, its rise. So it's very quick to make.
So what have we got here? We've got a mixing bowl.
Absolutely.
Go on over to the mixing bowl. All right, you can tell me exactly. On your feet, man.
Okay, here we go. We've got our mixing bowl here. And last night, you know, when I was a bit more sober, I put the flour in and weighed everything out. And basically, it's about 550 grams of flour, about good 3 teaspoons of baking powder, a little bit of sugar, and that's it. And I make up a big batch of that. So in the morning, when I'm groggy-eyed, I can make these breakfast soda breads so quickly and then have my coffee.
And what kind of flour have you used in that?
This is a really lovely flour. This one here is from Burcott Mill. It's a lovely traditional mill, and these mills are really struggling at the moment with the supermarkets, so there's something I really believe we should support. So, yeah, find ones like this.
And the Irish make soda bread. Is yours the same as the Irish soda bread?
Well, pretty much. I mean, this method was taught to me by a baker just near Waterford in Ireland. And what was different about his technique to the ones that I'd been taught was that he mixed the mixture really, really soft. It was almost like a batter, but it made the most delicious light soda bread. Their flour is different, but, you know, you can do good soda bread with flour here.
So all we've got so far in the mixing bowl is the dry ingredients, and you can make up a large amount of that and store it until you need it?
Absolutely. You just take an equal weight of this flour mix and then add in another mixture of yogurt and milk. So say you had 250 grams of the flour mix, you'd add 250 grams or mil of a yogurty milk.
Well, you happen to have the milk.
Absolutely.
And the yogurt on hand. So there is the bowl with the dry ingredients.
So what I'm doing, I'm just pouring into it roughly half the measure of milk, and then get the lid off the yogurt here.
And that's just plain yogurt?
Just plain natural yogurt. But you could use, if you had some creme fraiche, you could use that. You could even make your own, which is...
Make your own yogurt?
Yes.
Oh, that's very advanced.
No, it's just warming milk and then stirring yogurt in and leaving it overnight. It's very, very simple. I think there's what people like about this is the self-sufficiency that's in it, that you can just do it yourself.
So then you stir that in, and what sort of consistency is that going to make?
It's what my mum used to call a dropping consistency. That is, you stir it together, and if you lift the spoon up, it just drops very gently. You'll see it's much more like a batter.
But it's a stiff... I know what you mean by the dropping consistency. My granny used to talk about dropping it, and it drops off the spoon as you lift it.
And it's lovely. But that's it. There's no kneading. That was it. That was all the work.
And that's going to be bread.
And that's going to be
very
bread.
Very easy. How do you then bake them? Muffin tins.
I just use muffin tins because it portions them, but you could take this mixture and bake it in a loaf tin. You could bake it however you want. I cut out these squares of non-stick paper and then just scoop the mixture. I'll use my finger.
Yeah,
don't mind.
Fine. So that's quite a big dollop, isn't it, into the muffin tin?
It's a big breakfast.
And how long do you bake those for?
You bake them for 20 to 25 minutes. Check them after 20, because often they turn out, they can get a bit hard. Do add melted butter to this. You could add some berries to it if you wanted some blueberries in the morning or something like that. You can make them really lovely.
Now, there are some, happily for me, that you have made earlier. And they've got seeds on the outside.
Yes, I put...
Did you put those on at that stage, when they've gone into the muffin tin?
Yes, at this stage,
All right, now, you keep talking whilst I try this one. This one has got...
Well, for everyone that's listening...
Cream cheese.
Yes, she's really eating it. It looks lovely. It looks delicious, actually. I'm quite tempted, I must...
Cream cheese and smoked salmon.
Get in there.
Oh, the bread is a really interesting... nutty flavour.
Mm. And this is because of the flour. The flour, if you get flour from traditional mills, often there is more flavour and there's more texture in it. So, just taste it. It's lovely.
Now we've both got our mouths full. That's very rude. So you can put the seeds on. What other toppings could you put on there?
Oh, you can put oats on top. You could dust them with flour. You could even, this perhaps is more for the afternoon, sprinkle cinnamon and sugar on top, perhaps some demerara sugar and cinnamon, and have them almost like a sweet wholemeal scone.
They are really, really nice. The other one's got honey on it.
And don't you like the soft texture?
It's a really lovely texture. How long do they keep?
Oh, you can freeze them. But as you saw, I mean, it's very easy to make them fresh. I think I'd tend to make less of them and make them more often and just have this dry mix there.
You made these this morning?
Yes.
Oh, they are really fresh and lovely. Dan Leppard, the soda bread is lovely. Thank you very much for being with us. And the book is Short and Sweet, The Best of Home Baking.
One thing you may have noticed that is not mentioned in that recipe is oven temperatures. And for this bread, you need to heat the oven to 200 degrees C. That's 180 degrees for fan-assisted ovens. 390 degrees F, that's gas mark 6. Next, we have a recipe for bread and butter pudding. And this incorporates panettone, which we will learn about in this recipe. Let's enjoy.
Sophie Dahl, famously a former model and the granddaughter of the children's writer Roald Dahl. She joined me to explain how to cook the perfect bread and butter pudding with panettone and to tell me all about her love of nursery food.
Nursery food is quite Victorian. It's quite Mrs. Beaton. It's cauliflower cheese. It tends to be white and milky.
Stodge.
Yeah, basically. And a bread and butter pudding is quintessential nursery food.
Now, your bread and butter pudding is great because it uses up that Christmas gift so many of us get, and very few of us want, which is the...
the ubiquitous panettone. Mine always end up on the top of my fridge gathering dust. So to stop the panettone graveyard, turn them into a bread and butter pudding.
What is it exactly, panettone?
It's a delicious yellow cakey bread with candied peel in it.
And it's the Italian version of Christmas cake?
Christmas cake, but it's much lighter than Christmas cake. It's like that sort of really mealy, soft white bread with sugar added.
Yeah, I don't want to diss the thing, but it's what you buy somebody at Christmas when you don't know what to buy them.
Yeah, but it's actually sort of heaven, and it's particular heaven when drenched in cream and sugar and eggs and baked.
Take us through the recipe. What do you do with your there's your unloved little panettone?
Yes.
Or big panettone.
So you get your panettone, slice it up, butter it, put it in a buttered dish, pudding basin. You mix milk, cream, vanilla, eggs.
What vanilla essence?
I actually use a vanilla pod, scrape the seeds into the mixer with the cream, the eggs and the sugar. You can use either caster sugar or I actually used with that soft brown sugar. Mm. Cover the panettone and bake it in the oven for 20 minutes, half an hour. And actually, my exact recipe has apple in it, but 11 o'clock last night...
Didn't you have any apple?
I didn't have any apple. So that is the panettone bread and butter pudding without apple.
Well, the one that you made for me last night at 11 o'clock, could I have some of that now, please?
You can indeed.
That would be just the job.
You can.
Great big saucer of bread and butter pudding. Oh, that looks very inviting. Let me stretch over.
All right, yeah.
Thank you. And what with me being such a delicate little bird-like woman, I'll just eat it with a teaspoon. Now, this... I'm trying to do justice to a description of this, but you said comfort and you said nursery.
Stodgy nursery.
Stodgy, and it's white and it's wobbly.
Yeah.
And it is bringing me immense comfort.
Possibly more comfort if it had come with the brandy cream lurking in my fridge that I left at home.
So you didn't put any apple in and you left the brandy cream at home.
Yeah, sorry, you got the poor man's... poor man's 11 p.m. bread and butter pudding.
That would be brilliant on Christmas Day or Boxing Day, actually. You could serve it up on Boxing Day.
I think I'm actually going to make that on Boxing Day.
That is Sophie Dahl.
And now, a recipe for Sureki bread, or Greek Easter bread. And before you all shout at once, yes, I know it's not Easter, but I'm going to give you the recipe anyway. Mullab is a spice made from ground cherry stones, and along with piney gum mastic, gives this Greek Easter bread its distinctive flavour. Hard-boiled eggs dyed red and pressed into the bread give it its distinctive look. For this recipe, you will need 500 grams, 1 pound, 2 ounces, strong white flour, plus extra for dusting. 7 grams fast action yeast. 10 grams salt. 60 grams, 2 ounces butter softened. 75 grams, 3 ounces caster sugar. Pinch gum mastic powder. Pinch mullab. This is also called Mekleb or Malepi, and it can be bought from specialist supermarkets or delicatessen, or you can also buy it online. Pinch of ground cinnamon. 1 orange, zest only. 150 ml, 5 fluid ounces warm water. 150 ml, 5 fluid ounces milk. A handful of sultanas. 3 free-range eggs, hard-boiled in their shells, with red food colouring. 1 free-range egg beaten for egg wash. And
this is what you do.
1. Put the flour, yeast, salt, butter and sugar into a large bowl. Add the mastic powder, mullab and cinnamon, then the orange zest. Pour in half the water and milk and mix together briefly, then keep adding the liquid and mixing until you have a soft glutinous dough. 2. Mix the sultanas through the dough, then tip out onto a lightly floured surface and knead until you have a pliable dough. Shape into a ball and rest for at least an hour or overnight in the fridge until doubled in size. 3. Line a baking tray with baking parchment. Divide the dough into 3 and roll into 3 strands. Plait the strips together, place on the baking tray and leave to rise for another hour or until doubled in size. 4. Preheat the oven to 210 degrees C, 400 degrees F, gas 6. Brush the top of the bread with egg wash and push the coloured eggs into the bread. Bake for 20 to 25 minutes, then transfer to a wire rack to cool. If you'd like to contact the programme, perhaps you have recipes to share, cooking experiences you want to tell us about your favourite food, your favourite meals out, anything you want to talk about, feedback, perhaps you have ideas for future shows, you can contact the show by emailing cooking@theglobalvoice.info. That's COOKIN @theglobalvoice.info. To download or to listen to this programme again, go to theglobalvoice.info/gallery, or you can visit incx.org, where you can subscribe to the What's Cooking podcast. Well, we've come to the end of another show, I'm afraid. So that's all for today. Until I'm with you again, this is Sue Hadfield saying look after yourselves and each other. And as always, happy cooking!